being these days, you got to make a reservation. It's very simple. You call 727-733-3773. You get on the board and away you go. Great haircut, great price. Andrew's Master Barbershop. And also, you can listen to us anytime. We're on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, of course, 10 to 11 a.m. But you can listen to us anytime because that sets up all our shows on podcast, the miracle of the internet, of course. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Listen anytime, anywhere. All right. Wow. Lots of things going on, as usual, in the news. What about all of these cities that are just, they can't control the violence anymore? Several big city mayors that have seen upticks in their crime rates and escalating clashes between the cops and the protesters are demanding, listen to this, they're demanding that federal agents be withdrawn from their cities. Why don't you demand that all of the people that are tearing apart all of the stores and buildings be withdrawn? But they want the feds out. And they say any plans for more federal deployment be halted. Now, remember, the feds cannot come into a city unless there is a federal reason. The president cannot just say, hey, it's not going well in Chicago. Let's send in the feds and they'll replace the police or work with them. No, you don't do it that way. There is a separation of the federal government and the local and state and city governments, as it should be. However, when federal property is at risk or when a federal crime is being committed, then the executive branch of our government has the right to send in federal officers. And that is the rub. That is the rub. So you've got things going on right now in Portland, Oregon. You got things going on in Chicago. You have things going on in New York. And for a while, you've had things going on in Seattle, among other big cities. And when there's federal property involved or when a federal crime is being committed, now what is a federal crime in this case? When somebody crosses a state line to incite violence, if they have information that there are people that have crossed the state line, let's say they're coming from some other state to Illinois to go into Chicago. They cross the state line and they go into the city and they help incite violence. That's a federal crime. Did you know that? You can't do it. So, The trick is to know if you've got any of those people inside of the groups that are doing that, if you've got some sort of inside information. However, here's the real deal. You got to work with the mayors of these cities so that they agree. You can't have city police and the mayor up against federal officials, can you? That won't work. You can't do that. So they've got to work together. That's the trick. That's the trick. Now, in two separate letters, one addressed to Bill Barr, the Attorney General, and one addressed to the acting Homeland Security guy, Chad Wolf, with copies going to Pelosi and Schumer. Of course, they're going to get copies. These are Democrats, right? Every big city is a Democratic mayor. They also sent one to McConnell. Good. He's a Republican. The mayor's expressed objection to the presence of federal agents in their cities without coordinating with local authorities. Here's what they say in the letter. Deployment of federal forces in the streets of our communities has not been requested, nor is it acceptable. Now, here's who signed it. The mayor of Portland, the mayor of Atlanta, the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of D.C., mayor of Seattle, the mayor of Kansas City. What's Kansas City doing in there? Do they have some trouble? I guess they have trouble there, too. So those mayors signed this thing. Now, this is not going to look good for those mayors when everybody's watching television and watching their cities go to hell in a handbasket, right? I don't think. But that's what they're going to do. And This is going to continue. I think tonight when Trump does his virus briefing, I think he's doing it around 5 o'clock. I'm sure that the fawning press, not so fawning, are going to ask questions about all of this. So maybe Trump will have an answer for it. But Trump needs to know. You can't just send them in just because you don't like what's going on there. You cannot do that.
Well, there was a New York City detective on one of the shows. There was an incident, I think, over last weekend where there was supposed to be a peaceful march that turned into some rioters grabbing sticks and beating over the, you know, over the fence and what, hitting the, some police officers. He said, the problem that we're having right now that bothers me a lot, he said, is when you arrest one of these protesters and you take them down and you book them and their driver's license does not have a New York address. That's the problem, right?
That's it. Well, I mean, we've got people that want to incite violence.
Yeah, there's no
question about it.
There are groups that are sending them in there.
There is no question.
And you know, here's something, Paul. Look for this. Why is it that these rioters, and I always say there's a difference between protesting and rioting. It's day and night. Protesters are during the day, rioters at night. What are these people that are walking, why are they carrying skateboards? And you see what kind of a weapon those skateboards are, what they're doing?
I know there's a method to the madness, and I've also seen some people pull out these collapsible sticks, batons.
Yeah, like a baton.
Have you seen them?
Yeah.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
I saw a woman in the video, I think it was Portland, I think. And there she was, and there was a march, by the way, of people backing the police. And she was in the group not backing the police. And they wear black.
Yeah.
They tend to wear black.
Yeah.
And she pulls out this baton. It was only about maybe 8 inches long, but then she pops it, and it's...
Well,
it opens up to about this length.
Police officers have those. Yeah, they carry them on their belt.
They're dangerous.
And the end of it has a solid iron ball at the end of it.
So where do they get those things? And
Well, you could go to a police supply and grab those things. Come on. I mean, they're available.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not. I don't believe it's an illegal weapon.
How much did yours cost?
Mine. I just grabbed the antenna off my car, pulled that off. But the skateboards are what bother me because they are using...
Why would they use a skateboard except to get away?
They don't even ride them. They carry them.
So they can whack you over the head with the wheels?
Look how big the skateboards are. I mean, the board is... I mean, when I had a skateboard, it was probably like a 2x4 with a couple of wheels on it.
Right.
But these things are wide boards with big axles on them, and that's what they're using to vandalize the cars, the police cars.
Terrible.
And stuff. And hit people.
This is a huge issue. It's a huge issue, and we're going to be talking about it for quite a while. Anyway, we're going to change subjects. Let us take our break. And when we come back, Richard Morrison of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, we're going to talk about millennials that do investing. Maybe they're not so concerned when it comes to their own personal finances with social responsibility.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Come on, baby, don't you. Hey, we are back and delighted to have Richard Morrison join us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where he is a research fellow and focusing on the relationship between economic and political freedom. And he has penned a piece for CEI about how wealthy millennials are not really so concerned with social responsibility when they are, when it comes to putting their chips down on the table. So, Richard, I guess we've come to think that millennials are that group that are seriously interested in the environment and social causes, and therefore they're going to put their money where their mouth is, but not so true, huh?
Yeah, well, what we saw most recently was a study by the big money firm UBS. So they did the study on family offices. So these are the wealthiest families of people who have so much money they have their own kind of in-house financial management team. And it looked at the younger people in those families, so the people who are the millennial age, but are from these wealthy families with a lot of assets, and they found that there's not nearly as much enthusiasm for this. You know, some people call it socially responsible investing, some people call it impact investing, some people call it ESG for environment, social, governance. That there's been, you know, for several years now, there's been this sort of drumbeat of stories that said younger investors are really, you know, they're really interested in this. More and more, everyone's moving their assets to these, quote, socially responsible funds and investment vehicles. And, you know, the UBS study said, well, maybe that's not the case. That's maybe one thing that people are considering. People in, you know, these family offices are still, not surprisingly, the number one thing they're looking for is expected return from investment. And so the social responsibility signature is definitely, you know, two or three, or, you know, lower down on their list of priorities, which, you know, doesn't seem like it should surprise me, but for people who have been hearing all these stories about how young investors, the most important thing supposedly is that, you know, they have, quote, socially responsible investing. This recent study puts, and it's, you know, very much from inside the world of high finance and investing, maybe puts a little cold water on that.
Yeah, indeed. And it's interesting, they even fooled analysts like, I guess, Ernst & Young and S&P Global, because they believed a few years ago that, hey, these people are going to, you know, they're going to be looking at all of these different things and rejecting certain maybe funds that contain companies that they don't think are doing well for the environment, things like that.
Yeah, I quoted a couple of those examples from the past couple of years where investment companies are saying, you know, just like we mentioned that, you know, this is the big new trend and that's the hot train that everyone's jumping on. I mean, some of those companies, of course, are building up that expectation precisely so they can sell investment advice to people in that category. So big investment companies have separate, you know, ESG or socially responsible funds. They have separate advising services. So if you had a lot of money to invest and you went to one of these big companies and said, well, I'm really interested in ESG, I've got $100 million, what should I do with it? You know, they'll say, oh, we have a specially trained, you know, investment advisor who does just that sort of thing. Here's his, you know, $500 an hour, you know, hourly rate. Let's get you set up. So it's, I don't know that anyone is being fooled by anything, but I think that it's not all about altruism. It's not all about helping the environment. There's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, there's been, you know, recent studies that looked into whether, you know, does this category of investment provide as much returns as others? And, you know, the short version is the evidence is mixed. But one of the things that's come up when it comes to funds, mutual funds and ETFs that have this sort of so-called socially responsible focus, is that they have higher fees. Their returns, pre-fees, might be somewhere around, you know, other similar mutual funds. But because the people managing them do actually have to do more work and more analysis to sort of analyze whether these companies, you know, belong in this category or not. So companies routinely charge higher fees for, quote, socially responsible investment vehicles. So they're actually more profitable for the investment management company, which is part of the reason why you get so much hype, even coming from these big finance firms themselves.
I think most kids, and I'm thinking back to when I was doing my investing at the beginning, don't really care about really looking into these companies anyway, because they figure, look, there are so many tie-ins with companies to other companies to other companies. So this thing about environmental responsibility and the like, it sort of fades. I mean, it's a lot of work to end up figuring out which of these funds, you know. I mean, do they take the word of the people that are selling the funds? I'm not so sure. But then, you know.
Yeah,
go ahead.
There's a big question about whether the names and the hype around some of these investment products stand up to scrutiny or not. So if you go on, you know, you look up popular mutual fund offerings or ETF offerings, for example, you know, where you can buy, you know, a basket of stocks at once and you're not evaluating each individual company. A lot of them, you know, there'll be the Morningstar ESG fund or the, you know, this other, you know, impact investing fund. And so it'll have that catchphrase that supposedly, you know, a lot of younger investors are looking for. But it's not as clear how the company decided whether or not the companies in question in the fund qualify. So are they higher, you know, are they applying a really strict level of scrutiny, or are they investing in anyone except, you know, whoever you might be the worst one? You know, people don't like tobacco companies, I guess. So maybe you don't buy the tobacco company, but you buy everyone else, you know, everything. You know, or maybe you decide just ExxonMobil. We're just not going to invest in ExxonMobil. That's it. And so some of the people, in fact, some of the people who take this most seriously have said a lot of these funds are not very rigorous. They're just kind of everything in the kitchen sink, or they're just a completely standard asset allocation, just maybe with a couple tiny exclusions. So the earlier this year, one of the commissioners on the Security Exchange Commission gave a speech at an industry conference, Commissioner Roseman, and he specifically said, well, maybe the SEC needs to look into this and see whether all of these ESG, socially responsible, you know, investment vehicles and funds, whether they're living up to their name or not, because the SEC has regulated funds in the past based on their name, just the name of the fund, not necessarily how they're doing their accounting, because theoretically, how you name a fund could be misleading to an investor. So I'm not sure all the companies that are offering these sort of, you know, socially responsible funds, when they put that in the name, want the scrutiny. I think they just want people to, like, nod, look at the name, and say, oh, well, that sounds good.
Of course they do.
You know?
Of course they do. They're in to make money. It's a capitalistic society. We're talking with Richard Morrison. He is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He focuses on the relationship between economic and political freedom. So, Richard, right now we're in a pandemic, and I guess a lot of people are they're being very frugal with their money. I don't know how much they're putting in. A lot of people are looking to keep their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. But I look at the stock market, and quite frankly, I'm kind of surprised it's doing as well as it's doing, despite the pandemic. Just kind of in general, your thought on, say, with millennials right now, during a crisis like this, are they changing? Is there any data about how they're acting? Are they acting like everybody else? What do you think?
Well, people who are, I think, you know, traditionally, you know, Paul, you and I are probably old enough to remember when the term millennials was first coined, and when we first start talking about millennials as the new generation, they were the, you know, 18 to 30 year olds, more or less. They were like the youngest adult. But of course, we've been talking about millennials for so long that they're no, you know, we sort of need to stop thinking about them as like the recent college graduate. They're now in the 30s and early 40s. They have kids, they have mortgages.
Well, you know, they're really, you know, my group was baby boomers. I'm not so sure that the baby part of it works anymore. Go ahead.
So, first, I think we need to kind of stop thinking of them as the youngest adults and thinking they're really more getting more to the middle adults now.
Right.
And, you know, the most important thing that you can say about anyone in their, like, investing background, if you follow, if all you know is their age, is that people, the younger you are, the less assets you're likely to have on average, and the older you are, the more assets you are likely to have. So if we were talking about the way we originally talked about millennials, where they were like the 20-year-old, then they wouldn't be having investment behaviors for the most part, because they wouldn't have enough money to be setting aside. But now that they're getting into this middle era, and there are people who, you know, there's plenty of millennials now who are homeowners, for example, they've got 401ks and pensions and retirement. I think they're doing what most, you know, middle-class people in America are doing, which is they're pulling back from consumption, and they're in a wait-and-see attitude. So if they people were lucky enough not to have been laid off or lost their jobs during the pandemic, they are very likely to still be contributing to a 401k or something, or, you know, like in the nonprofit world, we have what they call 403bs. They're probably still contributing to that, but they're, you know, tamping down on discretionary spending. So, you know, maybe a month or so ago, I think this was, came out from one of the Fed offices, you know, there was a graph that showed the savings rate and the income rate. So you had a lot of households, their income had gone down because so many people were laid off, of course. But the savings rate, because of there's so much uncertainty, is through the roof. It's the highest savings rate in American history. It's, wow. It's amazing. So that is, I mean, that's what people do in times of uncertainty. They don't spend money they don't have to spend because they don't know if they're going to have it, you know, next week or next month or next year.
Right.
But that's also pushing down things like, you know, retail stocks. So retail stocks are getting hammered, of course, because so many businesses had to be closed. They're not essential, of course. And, you know, if you don't have a mostly online platform, you just couldn't sell anything. But, you know, the other problem is that the money, even now that a lot of stores are reopening, a lot of people who are uncertain about the future are not spending that money that they would spend on, you know, ordinary consumer goods, things that aren't essentials, but things that would be, you know, inside the normal, you know, budget of a middle-class family.
Right.
So, you know, like you said, we've seen sort of most of what the, you know, economic watchers call a V-shaped recovery, which is, you know, a sharp decline followed by a sharp increase, you know, return in equity values, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumping back up, not all the way to where it was in February, but like you said, surprising a lot of observers, up higher than we would thought. But I think that maybe it shouldn't be that surprising, because, you know, the reason people put money in the stock market is not because they think we have the best possible economy now. It's because they're expecting a future return.
Right.
So what I think a lot of, you know, investors are saying is there's one, there's no better place to put your money. It's not like there's some alternate, you know, gold mine where you can put, you know, your funds instead. But also that, you know, the fundamentals in the American economy are strong. There's no reason to think that the coronavirus shock is going to last forever, and American companies are going to come back. What's interesting to me, I think, is about in relation to what we were just talking about, the sort of ESG, socially responsible investing. A lot of people have said, oh, well, this is the way socially responsible funds and ESG investment vehicles have responded to this is proof that they're good investments. Irrespective of all of the environmental concerns, you know, they say, look, it's a, you know, you're not sacrificing anything by being socially responsible. It's just a good, solid investment, period. Because ESG funds have done pretty well and often done better than, you know, market averages, mm-hmm. which obviously hit earlier this year at the beginning of Q2.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons for that, if you kind of look into it, is that, you know, ESG funds are way underweighted in things like natural resources and energy, because those are the dirtier industries. So, you know, people don't like, they don't like oil companies, they don't like, you know, mineral extraction, gold, copper, you know, iron companies that have a lot of operations in there. And they tend to really like technology companies. Because the, you know, the environmental impact is less. There's no heavy manufacturing, especially if you're just a software company. Well, surprise, there's a low environmental impact to like writing code when you're sitting in an air-conditioned office in Silicon Valley instead of digging the, you know, basic material of civilization out of the earth.
Well,
that just, but that just happened to be the way that the pandemic hit. It privileged technology companies and really hit energy companies. We saw those crazy oil future prices where oil, you know, oil futures were negative because, you know, demand was so low. So I think it's, it can be taken as some evidence, but it's also a coincidence that it happened to be all of the companies that were not hurt by the pandemic happened to be ESG favored ones, and all the ones that were hurt the most were the disfavored ones. But it could easily be mixed the next time we have a market this week.
Yeah, Richard, I got to cut you off. I'm running up against the clock on this. Just a very, very interesting topic. I want to thank you for being with us and talking a little bit about millennials not so concerned right now with investing in a social responsible way. Just they want to keep their money and make some just like everybody else. But I want to thank you, Richard, so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
All right, sir. Richard Morrison. All right, we're going to take our break when we come back. When we come back, President Trump's going to be reviving those briefings on the virus. We're going to talk about whether or not it's because of the uptick in cases with the master barber, Andrew Ceresi.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Just for you, Andrew. Happy birthday, buddy. How are you?
How are you doing?
We're doing good. You feeling any older?
I'm feeling Medicare, buddy. Medicare.
Are you using a walker and a wheelchair at the same time?
No, I'll get that free Medicare insurance now. I can go buy a new Cadillac with the payment I was paid.
There you go.
All right.
You know, you think like that, you can't be that old, Andrew. But we want to seriously wish you a very happy birthday today.
Well, thank you very much, Paul.
Of course, it's our pleasure. I mean, you're so sprightly. I don't even think of birthdays when I think of you.
I keep thinking about him now, buddy.
Okay, well, Donald Trump, who by the way doesn't look his age either, is reviving these virus briefings starting this afternoon. I think around 5 o'clock.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Please do.
Okay. Now, do you remember last week he took control of all the data from the CDC that was spreading it all over the place and going directly to our own, the federal health system here?
Yeah.
They're taking all the data now, and the data is a little bit different, Paul, than what they've been getting fed.
So there's a difference in what the CDC
has been pointing out.
As opposed to what's going on. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think you're going to hear a lot about that tonight. I forgot the name of the agency. The World Health.
World Health.
No, not World Health. No, it's our own.
You're talking about the Center for Disease Control, the CDC.
That's the CDC. He took the power away from him from taking all the data because they were just spreading it all over the place and all different things.
Yeah.
They've got their own federal health system now regulating this stuff and seeing what the true facts really are.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to hear a little bit about that tonight, Paul.
Okay.
And that's one thing I think we're going to hear about. And people are getting fed up with this, Paul. You know what? Back in 2009, 59 million people were infected with the swine flu. Remember that?
Yeah, it was, but we don't...
59 million people. How come they didn't close schools?
I don't know the numbers. It wasn't that big of a deal, quite frankly, in comparison to this, right? I mean,
of course. That's because, wasn't Barack Obama president then?
Yeah, I think.
Of course you didn't hear nothing about it. It was no big deal.
What year?
All of a sudden, Donald Trump is president. This is a big deal, Paul.
Well, he was president from 2012 to 2020. Okay. So when was the swine flu?
2008, 2009.
Okay, that's before Barack.
Okay, well, we didn't hear about it then either.
No.
They didn't close nothing down.
No.
Okay, it's an election year. They're trying to get rid of Trump. This is a bunch of baloney, Paul. People are fed up.
Well, there's been a lot of pressure in his reviving these virus meetings. Remember, when these virus meetings were going on, I think people did indeed, they would tune in. And let's be honest, President Trump did use these briefings to tout what they were doing. And I'm not saying he wasn't right to do so. And he would have Fauci on, Dr. Fauci, and he would have that Dr. Birx, that lady. I suspect that she will be back. I suspect Dr. Fauci will be back. But there is some concern because there has been a spike, even if we don't think there's been a spike maybe in the number of deaths. We've certainly noticed there seems to be a spike in the number of cases. So all of that must be playing into it, right?
Yeah, Paul, they're just playing in, but the numbers still aren't there. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We just hit 5,000 people dead in 3 months?
You're talking about Florida.
About Florida, yeah. Out of 23 million people. I mean, I'm going to take those odds, Paul. I'm sorry.
I don't know. The odds are low. There's no question, and there are other... states
what
that
about
are doing
what my... about the teachers here? They're making me laugh my rear end off.
Yeah.
Oh, the teachers' union. Oh, we can't go back to school because we're going to get sick and everybody's life is in danger. What about the grocery store workers? Been doing this through a whole freaking time, Paul. These teachers need to wake up and get a grip on life.
I think they have to figure something out because let me tell you something that really rings true to me. I mean, I go back and forth about, you want to keep the kids safe, you want to keep the teachers safe, you want to keep the school personnel safe. We all agree. But then I look at the inner city kids, or I look at poor families where those parents have to work. And now these kids are not in school while these parents are at work. So what are the kids doing? They're kind of at home on their own, rather unpatrolled.
That's right.
So I'm worried about them. And I think it's always those kinds of kids,
But, Paul, social distancing is important, okay? I agree with that. I don't agree with walking around with a mask on. They better just stay away from people. Don't shake their hands. Now, I'm going to take you back in history. When I went to school, my graduating class was 666. The schools were packed, okay?
Yeah.
You know what they did, Paul? They did what they call split sessions.
Right.
We had the morning session and the afternoon session. Okay, now I don't know why these people aren't coming up with this idea. I'm hearing all kinds of baloney. Oh, they can do it on their computer. And nobody said split sessions. Come on, you cut the classes in half. You do your social distancing. And even if you got to do six-day week, school week, you do 6 days, 3 days of peach. You can do that, or you can do morning and afternoon sessions. Mm-hmm. I don't see the problem here.
Right. We're talking with Andrew, the master barber, who is the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Mainstream America's most, I think, most accurate poll. And he's a little bit upset about not getting those kids back in school. I was watching this, the head of the teachers union, Andrew, this morning, I think, on C-SPAN. I think her name is Weingarten. And she's head of the public school unions, basically. And she's telling everybody that the teachers, we just cannot have these kids back right now. The kids got to stay at home, and we're protecting the kids, and this, that, and the other thing. Well, you know, it's not that always cut and dry.
Then we got to close the grocery stores, too.
Exactly. So there's the point. Everybody still is going to the grocery stores. They're still going out to
Home
buy.
Home Depot's back, Paul.
Exactly.
Let me tell you something. You're lucky Ronald Reagan isn't alive today. Because if he was, you know what he'd do?
Yeah,
he'd do. Just like he did to the air traffic controllers. You are all fired. We're bringing up the next line. And you know what? The next line was happy to come up. They were working for even less.
Now, the air traffic controllers, that was a federal situation. I'm not so sure he could do it to the teachers' unions. However, the idea remains good. And that is, you got to get them in line. I think they could, like you said, Andrew, they could figure out whether it's, morning classes and then a group for afternoon classes. You know, they could space, they could use the auditoriums. The weather is good right now, or in September, I should say, August, September, the weather is still fairly good. They can use outside settings. And these kids, these kids aren't dumb. You can tell kids, now look, kids, we're going to social distance because of this situation. You can have the masks, the teacher, they can figure it out.
Well, listen, these teachers have been a bunch of liberal people for the last 15, 20 years. That's why we got a bunch of these millennials that don't know what's going on. They live in the basement. They can't do nothing. These kids have all been brainwashed. You need to get rid of these teachers anyway and start all over.
Well, indeed, we're an advocate here for the vouchers for private schools.
That's right.
And by the way, they're not tethered to the unions. So
that's right.
So these schools can work in partnership and listen to the parents and say, okay, let's figure it out. Let's be honest. When you're in Idaho or Wyoming or Montana or, some of the states, Maine or Vermont, you might not have such a densely populated area. You can figure out how to open schools and work with those people.
Yep. I'll tell you, Paul, they need to do something. Actions speak louder than words. They're talking too much and doing nothing.
Right.
Get the job done and shut up.
So now on another subject, Donald Trump has been talking about sending in federal forces in certain major cities. And the mayors are saying, no, we don't want you to send them in, even though here in Portland or in Chicago or, in some of these other cities, Seattle, we're having all kinds of trouble right now. We'll deal with it. Now, they do have that right to
52 days they've been dealing with it, Paul. What about the citizens in Seattle?
Right.
52 days of rioting and trashing.
Well, here's my point, though. The president controls the federal situation. So when federal crimes are being committed, which I think they are, I don't know if you listened
That's right.
to it earlier, or if a federal building is being vandalized, attacked, those are reasons you can bring federal troops in.
Yeah, but Paul, you know what? These people are lucky they live in this country, because if they were in another country, they would have brought in the machine guns.
Yeah.
Number one, okay? They need to get a grip. This country is going backwards. It needs to stop. Get a grip. Get it taken care of. And you know what? I think this next election is going to make it. I think this country is going to turn red.
I'm starting to feel good again. I was a little bit worried, I'll be honest, last week or two, thinking about all of this. But I'm beginning to realize that basically, I think things are rolling and turning. And as we move into November, I think people are going to be, they're not stupid. They can see what's going on in this country. They can see all of this radical thing. It helped get Richard Nixon elected the first time in 1968.
You know when you're going to start feeling real positive, Paul?
When?
When you come down to the Republican Center over here in North Pinellas, and we do that live show, and you're going to see candidates, you're going to talk to candidates, and you're going to see how motivated the people are to get this done and get moving. You're going to be around a lot of motivated people, Paul.
What a beautiful segue you just made, Andrew. That's what makes you good. You can go from talking about city street protests to a primary, which indeed is coming up on August 11th, and we are indeed planning on being there with you.
We've got to bring up the positive, Paul. Nothing is negative, and you're going to see what the people are thinking. You're going to meet a bunch of people that think just like I do, Paul. We're out to take our country back, and it's going to happen.
No, I think you're right. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be August 11th. That is indeed
primary day. Well, I need to tell you something. John and Ron are doing a great job putting this thing together. You're going to have candidates there. We're going to try to get a call from the governor to acknowledge what we're doing.
That would be great.
You know what I mean?
So yes, I do.
We're going to try and pull it up. I'm going to try to get Trump to call.
Boy, oh boy.
Well, I'm working on it, buddy. I'm working on it.
Well, listen, as long as you're trying to get him to call, why doesn't he make a personal appearance?
Well, that would be great, Paul. That would be great. No, I'm asking for that for my birthday present.
Oh, that would be great. Or if he doesn't make a personal appearance, I know somebody that's got a life-size poster in his store.
That's right. Well, he'll be there, believe me.
There we go.
He will be there. You got no question about it. And they're going to see all the people, all the Trump sign holders are going to be there, Paul. Ron and John are getting the candidates coming in there. We're even trying to get Gus Bilirakis to come by.
Hey, on a serious note, and I shouldn't do it over the air, but can I sneak in for a haircut, or do I need to make my phone call before I come in today?
As long as you got your four masks on.
I do.
Okay, four masks. All right, I'm okay. And your gloves, pairs of gloves.
I'm going to take my
mask. You got to wear them while you're driving here in the car. I got to make sure you're in the car with that on. Because I want to take a video of it.
Oh, that's going to be something with four masks on and gloves.
You got it, buddy.
How many pedestrians can I run over on the way to your shop? Anyway, I'll be over there after the show.
You got it, my friend. But I'm getting excited about this. And, you know, the closer these elections are coming, I want it done. I want to take over with this freaking state and the country in red and get life back to normal. As of November the 5th.
Very good, Andrew. I love your energy, buddy. I love what you think. Okay. Well, thank you so much, my friend, and I'll see you in a little bit.
You got it, my friend. Take care.
All right. There he goes. Doggone, the master barber. I'm looking forward to that, Ed. We can do that. He talked about having Mike Bilirakis, who is our congressman here, you know, in our area, show up, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. So we'll look forward to it. It's Tuesday, August the 11th. Let us take our final break. When we come back, among other things, did you know a new poll shows that a majority of people in this country believe we are racist?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment, and this poll really kind of scares me. A new poll on race relations in America shows a clear majority believe the country has a problem. Wall Street Journal NBC poll, 900 registered voters, and they were asked about whether or not this country is racist. 56% agreed that American society is racist. Now, the number varied among demographics. 66% of women believe it. Wow, 66%. 46% of men believe it. 82% of Democrats believe it. 30% of Republicans believe it. But a majority of white, black, and Hispanics in the poll all agreed that the U.S. is racist. Even 51% of white people. 51% of white people think it. Now, most voters who participated said they support the protests that have taken place since the death of George Floyd, with 57% expressing support. But here's an interesting thing on this. The response to a question about what should be done with the Confederate statues, only 51% said they should be removed, with just 10% calling for destructions. The others said that they should be moved to museums. 47% said that they should be left in place. But I'm not so sure I think that 56% believe the country overall is racist. That doesn't sound...
Well, the one thing that a lot of it is racial stereotyping, I think. And you know what? These looting things are not helping the situation at all.
Right. Right. It's and there is stereotyping. There's a lot of, let's face it, there's a lot of white people with those
and
black bandanas.
It's on both sides. It is on both. You have people that have felt that way for years about African Americans, black people. But you know what? There are black people and African Americans that feel the same way on the other side, too.
Right. True.
That they're just old school and they're not going to change.
Maybe not.
It's on both sides.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, baseball season opens up in a couple of days. Yay! We're going to finally have some sports going on. So we decided to do the top 10 largest Major League Baseball parks, Ed. And I want to see if you know what's number one. So let's get going. Number 10. It's in Philadelphia. Citizens Bank Park, 43,651. Number 9. Anaheim, California. The California Angels Stadium, 45,050. Number 8, Baltimore. Mm. Did you know? That's a beautiful stadium.
Yeah, I'd love to go there.
Camden Yards. Yeah, it looks so pretty. 45,971. Number 7, St. Louis. Busch Stadium, 46,861. Number 6, Oakland. The Oakland Alameda County Coliseum.
God, that place is a turd.
It is?
Yeah.
Have you been there?
I've just heard the announcers on Saturday saying how everything is so outdated. The internet doesn't even work. And
it doesn't work?
No. It's awful.
Well,
awful. They even said the worst ballpark in the league.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy Toledo.
I think the Raiders won it out.
Wow. Well, it's got 47,170 people. All right.
Don't go.
They don't show up. Well, that's the thing. Nobody's going to be there for any of these games.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when the ball is hit on the bat, it's going to have an echo effect.
Yeah.
All right. Number 5, Seattle. And they got a fairly new stadium. T-Mobile Park, 47,476. They used to have a horrible stadium. Number 4, the new Arizona Diamondbacks in Phoenix. Chase Field, 48,633. Number 3, now you might have been here because you go to Colorado.
Coors Field?
Yeah, you've been
love
there?
Love it. Oh, one of the best ballparks in the league.
Yeah.
So much to do.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's got 49,469 seats. All right. Number 2, Yankee Stadium.
Mm.
Yeah, New York. 52,000. 325.
You have to with all those bandwagoners that jump on, you know?
All right, Mr. Baseball Expert.
Oh, I have no idea.
I want you to
guess. I was
going to
say Yankees.
It can't be the Yankees. No, take another guess.
Well, I know it's not Tropicana Field. Let's go with the Atlanta Braves. I don't know.
That's a good guess. All right. The answer is Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, Dodger Stadium, I remember, and it shows you how old I am, they played in a Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
When they moved from Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
and believe me, I was little then, but when they moved, they played in this huge Coliseum. It had like 85, 90,000 people that could go there,
right,
you know.
Right.
But now it's exactly 56,000 people, right on the noggin, 56,000 people.
Hey, Dr. Fucci Fauci's going to be throwing out the first pitch Thursday night at the Nationals game. There's a four-part bet going on. Does 60 feet?
Is he really? Or?
Yes, 60 feet from pitcher's mound to home plate. Does he A, throw it overhand? Does he underhand it? Does he roll it? Or does he just drop it?
He might be a very good athlete. You just don't know about that. Oh, wow. All right, my friends. We will be back on Friday. In the meantime, be safe and always remember that freedom works.
For the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that little light.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
White House update, Capitol Hill complaint. I'm Jan Johnson. President Trump is bringing back the daily coronavirus briefing today.
The chair of the Coronavirus Task Force, Vice President Mike Pence, is in Charleston today and will not be on hand for the briefing President Trump has decided to revive. It will involve him apparently updating the nation on the status of the COVID-19 fight, treatments, and prospects for a vaccine. He teased that out with a morning tweet, tremendous progress being made on vaccines and therapeutics. It is unclear if any other members of the task force will join Mr. Trump, especially the health experts who have irritated him from time to time in recent weeks as they express alarm at the surging number of new cases. On the other hand, the president did tweet yesterday that wearing a mask is patriotic with a photo of himself donning one. Bob Costantini, The White House.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says Republicans need to unite over a plan for a new relief package, expressing frustration over White House demands for a rollback in testing funds that don't line up with the concerns of GOP lawmakers.
We hope they're going to be unified and present something to us in detail, because up to now they've been dithering. They've wasted 60 days as the crisis gets worse and worse and worse.
Officials in Portland, Oregon continue to call on President Trump to pull back federal officers who were dispatched to meet protests and scattered violence. Correspondent Josh Campbell is there.
The epicenter of these protests is largely relegated to one city block outside of a federal courthouse, where we've seen protests night after night, most of them peaceful. There have been instances of rioters clashing with federal officers who will come out of that building, launch projectiles into the crowd, tear gas and the like to try to push them back.
The president has also suggested he will send federal agents into the streets in Chicago and other Democrat-run cities with violent flare-ups. I'm Jan Johnson.
O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need for summer car maintenance, and our professional parts people can help you find the best oil change supplies for your car. Get 5 quarts of Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil and a MicroGuard filter for $28.99, plus a $7 gift card after mail-in rebate. For your summer oil change, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
How much money would you like to save just by doing something you're already doing? How about 40%? With Allstate, safe drivers can save 40% just by doing something they're already doing. Driving safe. That's right, 40% just by driving safe. Visit Allstate.com or call a local agent for a quote today and see just how much you can save when you drive safe with Allstate.
Not available in every state. Savings vary and based on DriveWise and other safe driving discounts. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
Monday was the final tune-up for Game 2 starting pitcher Ryan Yarbrough. The lefty allowed 5 runs in the second inning, eventually going 4 1/3. Rays manager Kevin Cash isn't going to take much stock in intra-squad results.
He had that one inning that snowballed a little bit, but he competed. Obviously wasn't as sharp as what we've seen him in the past. But definitely prioritize getting pitches in, getting the ups.
Yarbrough was pleased to get to 87 pitches Monday and says his buildup was a big part of the goal in summer camp.
Getting to the pitch count and getting all the ups, and especially as a guy who needs to cover some length of games, that was kind of the biggest thing.
Now the question is, will at least begin the year as the third starter in the Rays rotation? Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, and Trevor Richards all will pitch an intra-squad game on Tuesday night, and all are candidates for Game 3. With the Rays Report, I'm Neil Solons.
Catch the Rays all season on the Rays Radio Network. For tickets, visit RaysBaseball.com.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major